In our business meeting on Friday night, we discussed the financial situation in the congregation, some of the needs that we have right now and the money that we have with which to fulfill it. And we discussed having a sermon in which I preach the fact that we have more needs than we can fulfill right now. And I hope at the end of this lesson that maybe some of us will make a decision to up our giving a little bit short term in order to help meet those needs. But before I go into the details of that, I'd like to lay down the understanding that we all have regarding the church, the work of the church, the responsibilities of the church, and the fact that the local church is responsible to take care of that work. And so we will begin with a passage which I think is critical to our understanding, and that is that we are God's workmanship. When we were baptized and we entered into Christ, we became a new creation, and so we were created in Christ Jesus, and there was a purpose involved. The purpose was good works. Now, there are two forms of good works. There are the good works that we do individually, and there is the good works that we do collectively through the Lord's church. And so God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Now, I believe these are the works that we do collectively. I think this is the work of the New Testament church, that when God was in heaven planning for our salvation, as we read about in chapter 3, that he made this plan. I think I have that in the next slide, that he made this plan, that his wisdom might be made known by the church. And so he chose how we would become members of the church. He chose how Jesus would die on the cross. He chose how the work of the church would be involved. And so each one of us has a responsibility individually, as we have opportunity, Galatians chapter 6, let us work that which is good to all men. We certainly have individual responsibilities. But when it comes to the work of the local church, the funds that the local church has to use would obviously only come from that local church through the first day of the week contributions that we just had. And this is all according to his eternal purpose, or according to the good works which he prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. And they are specific works. We don't have the right to choose what the church is going to involve itself in, because God has already made that choice for us. And so in individual good works, as I say in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, our money, our time, and our efforts, we choose how to allocate that. And all of us have our own good works that we're involved in. Some of us like to go visit in the rest home. Some of us like to help out with people who are needy. Some of us visit our neighbors when they are sick. Some of us help mow their lawns and do things for them. Some of us pull over when we see someone on the side of the road with a flat tire and help them to fix it. We all have opportunities, and we all buy them up. And each of us individually has a responsibility and the right and the enjoyment of getting involved in those activities. But there are also congregational good works. And I think we're all aware that on the first day of the week, what we give to the Lord becomes the Lord's money. It's not our money anymore. We don't have the right to determine what to do with it. And so we have to take what God says here, which is now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, so also must you do. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up, as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. So here we learn that the treasury is authorized, that God does want the church to gather money on the first day of the week. And of course, in this specific case, it was for the needy saints. But there are other needs. There is the needs of evangelism. There is the needs of benevolence, as we see here. And there's also the needs of edification or building up the body of Christ. These are the three main works of the church. And so a successful church is walking in the good works that God prepared beforehand that we should walk in. And so we are involved in evangelism. As Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. And Jeff and I were talking this morning about 88% of all the money that you give is going to evangelism. It's going to pay preachers in various parts of the world and here. And so we are actively involved in evangelism because God prepared beforehand. This is the only work, this is the work that only the church can do. Who else is going to go into all the world and preach the gospel? Are the hospitals going to do it? Is the country going to do it? Is some other benevolent organization going to do it? No. There's only one group of people that God prepared beforehand would get the gospel into all the world, and that is the local church. And here at Holly Street, we take that very seriously. And as I say, we put about 88% of all of our money is going to the paying of evangelists, which is clearly the work of the church. As we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, it says it was the Lord's command that those who preach the gospel should live of the gospel, and this is one of the greatest means by which the gospel is propagated all over the world, is through these men who work in evangelism. Edification, of course, refers to the building up of the body of Christ. It is taking a new convert and helping them grow to become a mature Christian. It is the worship that the church is involved in. It is the activities of Bible classes and teaching and training and guiding and all of those things. It's why we have a church building. It's why we have the materials in the back of the building. It's why we spend money month after month taking care of these things. It's all part of edification. And again, talking to Jeff this morning, we spend about 11% of our contribution on the first day of the week now goes to the upkeep of the building, to the purchasing of materials, to sending money to Malawi so they could buy a copy machine and helping them to edify their brethren. And so, again, so what is that? 88 and 11, so about 99% of our money is involved in edification and evangelism. And rightfully so. That's what God determined the money should be used for. Now, benevolence only arises when saints have needs. And, of course, I think we're all aware that in our culture, we don't have that a lot. We have Social Security. We have life insurance, health insurance, car insurance. We have annuities. We have retirement. We have Social Security. And so we don't have a lot of widows. We don't have a lot of orphans here. These things have been pretty well taken care of. And so the benevolent needs that we have are taken care of case by case. And generally speaking, we don't budget for that because we don't have a lot of issues in this local work. But this is where our problem has come from, is because we now have an opportunity to get involved in a benevolent work in Malawi because they are going through another drought cycle and many of them are going to starve. Well, I won't say they're going to starve. Many of them are going to be uncomfortable. They're not going to have enough to eat. Some of them are going to lose a lot of weight because they don't have the ability to buy food. And so some will. I doubt that any will starve to death, but they will be very uncomfortable. And so we have an opportunity to help them with that. And so this reflects God's wisdom, and only when a church is fulfilling the will of God can it meet God's expectations. And using these verses as a standard, I think we can all be very happy with what the congregation is doing and what your money is being used for that you give on the first day of the week. And I say you, that we give, that I give, and you give in order to honor and glorify God. And of course, this is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 when he said that we need to lay up treasures in heaven. And one of the ways we lay up treasures in heaven is the individual sacrifices that we make doing our individual good works where we help people in need, and those things that we give on the first day of the week. This is treasure in heaven. It is money that we have sacrificed, that we have not used for our own desires and our own purposes in order to bring about the glory of God. This is how the church can walk in the good works God prepared. If you weren't giving, we couldn't support preachers. If we weren't giving, we couldn't take care of the needs of this congregation, and we wouldn't be able to do the good works that God prepared that we should walk in them. So we need to feel a sense of accomplishment. The money that we are giving is being used to the glory of God and for the work of God, and God is going, as Paul said, I don't seek for the gift, but I seek for the fruit that increases to your account. So every one of us has an account. every one of us. Jesus said, make use of unrighteous mammon so that when it fails, they will receive you into eternal tabernacles. And he also said that there is no one who has left wives or brethren or homes or anything who will not receive a hundredfold and in the life to come, eternal life. And so our stewardship in this realm, God is intensely interested in it. Jesus said, you can't serve God and mammon. And Jesus was very clear that those of us who are so attached to the things of this world, laying up treasure in heaven, using our material possessions for our own joy, for our own use, and to pass on to our own children without reflecting on the needs of the Lord and the needs of His church and the needs of His people, we are very short-sighted indeed. And as we talked about last Sunday night, the eyes of our heart are just not lit up yet. When the eyes of our heart are lit up and they're enlightened, when we can see the eternal value of our first day of the week contribution, we all know the value of paying for life insurance and health insurance and car insurance. It's something that you hope you never need, but if you need it, it's worth it. And so some of us are spending $1,000 or $2,000 a month on health insurance, car insurance, life insurance, and annuities. We're taking care of the future. When it comes to this life. But like Jesus said of that man who was covetous, he said, I'm going to tear down my barns and build bigger. I'm going to put more money into these things. I'm going to have a bigger annuity. I'm going to make sure that when I retire, I'm going to be able to live well. And there's nothing wrong with that. But Jesus said, if that's all you have and you're not rich toward God, then you're a fool. Matter of fact, that's what God said. You fool. Tonight, your soul is required of you. You came naked, you're leaving naked. Everything that you didn't give to me is gone. But those things that if you had given them to me, I would have kept them for you. And as Jesus said, you would be laying up treasures in heaven. And so these are the things that we need to think about. I think that God has made it very clear the value of our giving and the reward we will get from our giving. He's made it very clear what the work is. And I think that I've just shown you that we are doing exactly what the Lord wants done with that money. And so everything is in place and it's as it ought to be. And so our work at Holly Street is pretty well laid out, and I just wanted to cover it real quickly. We have some new members here, and maybe some of us have forgotten, but downstairs in the office, if you go down the stairs and you're walking toward the bathroom, the first opening on the right is an office with a desk in there and a file cabinet, and there's two folders on the corner of the desk. You walk in the door, you'll see them right on your left as you walk in the door. So there's two binders. And the first binder contains all the business meeting notes that summarizes the decisions made on the work being done at Holly Street. And I didn't look today to see how far back it goes, but it goes back at least a year or two. And you can go back and you can see exactly what the church is doing. We want everything to be transparent. We want everything to be open and above board. The other binder contains all the financial reports, monthly financial reports that contain each week's giving and the total at the end of the month of all the giving. And then it has each month's expenses listed out, each preacher and the amount of money that they were paid. And so the money contributed each week is listed on a monthly basis. The work the church is doing with its money is also listed. It's very transparent. And anyone can go down there at any time. We stop posting it because sometimes people come into the building and it's really none of their business how much the preacher is making or how much we are giving to other preachers or what we are doing with our money. So we don't post it, and we don't have a board that talks about how much we gave and what our attendance was, but it's all downstairs. We have an attendance roster. If you want to see what our attendance is, you can go back and look at that. We have the binders for the financial reports and the work of the congregation. It's all transparent. And the money is counted, and it is carefully accounted for, and everything is above board and exactly the way that it ought to be. Now, right now, as I said, we're spending about 88% on evangelism. We have me, a full-time evangelist. We have an evangelist in Louisville, Kentucky, one in Sunnyside, one in Hermiston, And we have 21 evangelists in the central region of Malawi. And I didn't add it up, but I know it's got to be about 100,000 or more a year. Maybe 120,000 a year is going to these men. And so our giving is phenomenal, brethren. When I look at what we're able to do with the number of people we have here compared to other small congregations, I am almost embarrassed to ask anyone to give any more, because I know some of us are giving a lot. We are making great sacrifices. You can't have, what do we have, about 30 people here, maybe what, 20 families, 15, 20 families, and yet we are giving upwards of 150 or more thousand a year, somewhere in that vicinity, is what we're giving here. And it's incredible, considering if you were to add up all the monthly incomes of all the people that are here, and somebody is giving 20, 15, 20, 25, 30% of their income to the church here. And I'm just thrilled to be here. I tell the brethren in Malawi all the time, do you know how blessed you are that this congregation can send me here? And that our brethren are giving so that we can do these things for you? And I challenge them, why don't you do this? You know, right now we shouldn't have to be helping these people. They should be doing it. They should be giving. I have been warning them year after year after year to give the way that I've just talked about how we should give. And yet, there's still a problem. But you have to ask the question, should they have to pay for their mistakes? And at some point I told them, you will. At some point there won't be any churches left in America to send money over here. That our brethren are getting older, and that one by one they're going to pass from the earth, and that much less money is going to be available, and sooner or later I won't be coming anymore, either because I'm dead or because we can't find the finances to be able to do it. And so these are critical things. I got off my track here. Edification is 11%. Again, money spent on the building, money we use to preach and teach the gospel and edify the saints. So we got hit with a big bill that we weren't planning on this month. I want to share that with you. Most of you, I think, are aware that I've had some serious health problems. They did a test in my home. They found that there was a mold problem. They did a blood test on me. They found that the mold was affecting my brain and my muscles, and that I needed to get it out. And so I'm spending a lot of money right now trying to get that mold out of my body. And we decided to test the building, and sadly, the building has some mold. You probably already knew it if you've ever walked down into the bottom of the basement. But the costs for taking care of that were not in our budget. And that's why when the cost for the paying of the taking care of the mold and the cost, which may be affecting some of you as well, it's definitely affecting me. So we're going to get that taken care of in the next couple of weeks. But that's an expense we weren't planning on. And unfortunately, we've made a commitment to all these preachers. We could spend all this money now and then write them and say, look, we can't help you anymore. But we prefer, since this is for a benevolent situation, to follow the scriptures. And that's where I'm going to go next. So, and then benevolence was just as needed. We set aside a certain amount of money each year to take care of the benevolent needs of the saints. Haven't had any for a few years, so we stopped setting it aside, but it's always there. If ever a need arises, we'll rise to the occasion, because we can't say no if we have the wherewithal or the opportunity and the ability to do it. So sometimes a church is faced with a need that exceeds its ability to meet, and that's kind of where we are right now. We're either going to have to write back and say, look, we'd like to help you, but we don't have enough money to be able to do that. And that is an option. But the purpose of this sermon is to give us an opportunity to dig a little deeper and to give a little more. We sent them $10,000 in 2016. Then in 2017, they had another problem. We sent them another $10,000. Which is enough to feed probably about maybe 8,000 people or 10,000 people. It's a lot of money. It will take care of a lot of families over there, because you can buy, what is it? 3, 6, 2. You can buy 2 kilograms, which is 4 pounds for a dollar. 4 pounds of food for a dollar. And so $10,000 works out to about 40,000 pounds of food, which again is a pretty good amount of food. So here's the scriptural situation. One of them, named Agabus, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. Now keep in mind, this is the church at Antioch, and they already have their work. They have preachers, they have work that needs to be done, they're paying their preachers, they're taking care of their needs, they're doing exactly the same thing we're doing. They're supporting preachers, they're taking care of benevolent needs, but now a new situation has arisen that they're not prepared for. They don't have the money for. They could say, well, sorry, we can't help, we don't have any money. But they said, no, that's not how we want to handle this. The disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. And so that's the opportunity that I'm offering today. We don't have the money to send them any money right now. But if over the next 3 or 4 weeks, we've asked Jeff to take a look at the extra money that is given, and whatever extra money that is given over what our normal would be this time of year, which is a little nebulous, but it'll be pretty close. We'd like to send 10,000. We'd like to have some of you here give enough so that those people over there don't have to go hungry, don't have to be uncomfortable. Some of us are in a position where maybe we don't have to buy that new car this year. Maybe we don't have to get involved in buying a new television or in doing some of the things that we're doing, and we can dig a little deeper. And that's what this is all about. And again, this is according to your ability, and it's free will. I'm not putting any pressure on you. I'm just explaining to you what the scriptures teach so that we can all buy up this opportunity, because that's what we need to be doing. We read in Jerusalem in chapter 4 and again in chapter 1 and chapter 2 that they were selling their properties. They were mortgaging their homes. They were selling their homes. They were selling. Barnabas sold his property. He brought the whole proceeds to help because he wanted treasure in heaven. So this isn't something that is unusual. This is something that the church has a responsibility to do. And it's always been that way. When the tabernacle was being built, they were already told to tithe, but this was additional. And so the tabernacle, so take from among you an offering to the Lord, whoever is of a willing heart. So I'm just trying to motivate us to be willing. These people are hungry. These people are going to be uncomfortable. We can help them. You've seen these TV programs where they show the people in their misery, and I'm not going to do that, but I want us to appreciate this is real. These people are going to starve. These people are going to be hungry. They're going to be uncomfortable. They're going to be forced to lose weight. They're not going to be able to eat enough to even be comfortable. They may get one meal a day. They may not get a meal a day. I remember when I first met Napoleon, the man that I used to work with years ago, and he would tell me that when the crops ran out when the crops ran out in February, you just didn't eat for February, March, until the crops were ready in April. You just didn't eat. And they were used to that. You know, we read of Jesus' 40-day fast. Well, these people know what that's like sometimes. And so this is just a problem they have. And I'll show you a map here in just a few moments to kind of help you understand what's going on over there. But here we have a situation where take from among you an offering to the Lord, whoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it as an offering to the Lord. And of course, this would be an offering to the Lord. Gold, silver, bronze. Then everyone came whose heart was stirred. And I'm just going to read the gold section or the orange section. And everyone whose spirit was willing, as many as had a willing heart. And that's what I'm trying to help you see today. We need to have this willing heart. The temple was the same thing. Now remember that when the temple was being built, they were already giving the 10% tithe for the Levites and for the priests. They were already giving their sacrifices. They were already giving another 10% for the king and to take care of the king's household. So they were giving somewhere around 25-30%. And now when the people rejoiced, for they had offered willingly, because with a loyal heart they had offered willingly to the Lord. These kind of opportunities only come along a few times in our lifetime. An opportunity where God is going to watch and see whether we're willing to make a sacrifice or not. And I've already discussed it with my wife, and I know what our sacrifice is going to be. And so, because we talked about this Friday night, but I wanted to share it. Most of the brethren probably have already done it, but wanted to share it. Now, here's what happened in verse 14. Who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you. Brethren, we have so much here. I mean, if you go through your budget and you look at what you're giving, I think the Lord's going to be shaking his head and say, Lord, I just couldn't give very much. I just didn't have much disposable income. Well, the reason we don't have disposable income is because we are entertaining ourselves with money, and we are eating well with money, and we're eating out with money, and we are using our money for superfluous things, possessions and things like that. And is there anything wrong with that? No, there's nothing wrong with that. But when an opportunity comes, we need to be ready to make a sacrifice. Verse 17, I know also, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. As for me, in the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things. And now with joy, I have seen your people who are present here to offer willingly to you. And I hope in a month or so to be able to get up and to talk with you and say, brethren, we did it. Here's what we sent over there. Now, we may not meet our 10,000 threshold. That's a lot of money, and we're already giving a lot of money. But I hope we can at least send 5,000 or maybe 7,000. I'm hoping that we can do something. And keep in mind, I'm going to be sending out other letters. There'll be other churches involved in this. But this is our opportunity and our work that we have the opportunity to involve ourselves with. I'm going to skip that one. Now, here's what I got from Malawi. I think this was last Monday or maybe a week ago Friday. They asked, this is from the elders. Biliad has gone to Mponela, which is a congregation I hold near and dear to my heart because I've worked with them since 1999. And it says this, they asked you one thing to help. They emphasize that I should pass this message that as a congregation, they are very much worried with hunger, which is very big now. Many Christians, having come to them, if they will be getting maize as in previous years. See, we sent maize in 2017, and we sent maize in 16 and 17. They didn't have a need last year, but this year they do. So they wanted to know. So they just want to make follow-up, as they verbally said to you last time. I assured them that I will pass the message. Then after getting a response, I'll come to you. Indeed, hunger has become a serious issue now. Wherever I go, people are asking for the provision of maize. In other words, how are we going to get maize? Is the church going to be able to help us? And I don't like this dependence, and I fight against it. But at the same time, here it is. And this is the situation that they're in. Now, here is what we're dealing with right now. This is July to September, so we've just passed through that phase. You can see the central region where I preach, the green means there's minimal stress. The yellow, this is where the floods were last year. This is where all the crops were washed away. And the problem is, these people were fine, but the vendors from here went up here and bought up all the maize. So now there's no maize here, so the prices have gone from 100 kwacha to 200 kwacha to 300 kwacha per kilogram, and it's just out of reach. Now, here's what's going to happen. Now, I got this off of USAID. This is a government-organized situation. This isn't something some church devised or anything. This is what is going to happen. And so you can see that here's Lilongwe, which is where Raphael and Biliat live. And here is Kasungu, and here is Nkodakota, and Salima, and Dadza. These are all in the central region. You can see Doa and Chinji Chisi are not as bad, but this is where the problem is going to be. And as I pointed out, I think there's 200 churches here, there's 50 churches here, there's like 200 here, there's 45 here, and there's about 80 here. So these are churches that are going to be stressed. And so you can see that crisis mode is going to happen in the southern region, but we don't work there. Here's Mount Raphael's. We have traveled to several places of late. All of a sudden, I think is what he meant to say, people have gone into critical hunger once again. Government estimates about 4 million are facing this hunger. Brethren have pleaded with us for assistance. Chimkande called last evening expressing his experience in Doa as well. Remember us in prayers, especially at this time while we are fighting against institutionalism. So they've got a lot on their plate, and I would like to be able to help them with this situation. So this was the history. I think we've already talked about this, so we don't have to really go over this anymore. But this is why I'm preaching this lesson this morning. I like this verse. I think it's the one that we all need to go home and search our conscience and make a decision regarding what we're going to do. Now, the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. And I hope that's where we are right now. I hope there's nobody out there who's frustrated with me thinking that I'm begging or trying to take more money from you since you're already giving so much. I just hope there's nobody out there like that. This isn't for me. I'm not going to take a dime of this money. And I don't care about the amount of money we send, but it's an opportunity for you. I do care, but I mean, it's not going to be a problem to me. I know money's going to come over there, like the Lord told someone. You know, if you don't do it, deliverance is going to come from somewhere because the Lord's going to take care of his people. So anyway, neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things common. I don't know if that's our attitude today. I doubt that it is because we don't have these issues here. We're not accustomed to having situations like you had 50, 60 years ago when we didn't have all of these insurances that we have today. And when people had a problem, everybody chipped in and everybody gave and everybody took things for them. If there was a fire, everybody took care of it. But that was the attitude here. It's the attitude we need to cultivate. Verse 33, with great power, the apostles gave witness to the resurrection, and great grace was upon them all. Then it continues. Now, nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold. This was the first day of the week contribution, clearly, and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each one as any had need. And Joses, who was also named Barnabas by the apostles, which is translated son of encouragement, a Levite of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. So I think this verse takes away most of our excuses if we're trying to make any. If we're thinking to ourselves, well, I just don't have any at this time. We can make a sacrifice. And so I hope that this lesson hasn't come across as a rebuke. As I said, I'm very proud to be a member of this congregation and to be the preacher here. We have always been so generous, and we want to be generous again, but I have to come to you, and we have to ask whether anyone here would be interested in helping. Now, I'm not going to harp on this. I may mention it a few more times, but this is all I wanted to do, was just give us an opportunity to understand that we now have a choice. We can be like our brethren in the New Testament age. We do have a need, and right now the congregation here can't meet it. And so this is an opportunity for all of us to make that greater sacrifice in order to help people who, yeah, I won't argue with you that some of this is of their own doing, but they're still brethren, and they still have needs, and we have the opportunity to help them. So their sin doesn't remove from us the responsibility of being able to help. And so, as I said, over the next month or two or however long it's going to be, Jeff will kind of be monitoring. We're not asking you to write a check and put Firmalawi on it. We're just asking you that you would give your regular contribution, and then whatever you decide you're going to give for Malawi, and if this is something you want to do over a few weeks or if it's something you want to do at one time, that's fine. But whatever extra we have, maybe at the end of January, we'll make an assessment and then decide how much that we're going to give. I don't know. That'll be up to the men of the congregation. But I just wanted to preach this lesson. As I say, it's not a rebuke. It's not even it's just an exhortation. We have an opportunity, and we can buy it up. So at this time, let's go ahead and pick up our song of encouragement, and let's think about a little bit Jesus the Loving Shepherd. And realize that God has given us everything. And now we have an opportunity to show the Lord how much we appreciate his gift. We have a giving God. He gave his son. We have a giving Savior who gave his life. And now we have the opportunity to also make a sacrifice. An opportunity that doesn't come along very often. So we have this opportunity. There is a need. We can't meet it. We'd like to meet it. And so as we sing the song of encouragement, if there's anyone in the audience who is irked at this lesson or feels like maybe this isn't something they wanted to hear, I think you really need to think about it while we're singing this song, because I don't think anything that I've said today isn't right out of the Scriptures. And if there is, please let me know, because I certainly do want to preach the truth. So if there's anyone in the audience at this time who would like to make their life right with God in any way, we invite you to come while we together stand and sing.